You're listening to Not Good Enough, an inadequate response to inadequate responses. I'm Tom McLean.
I'm Tom Lang.
I'm Mitch Alexander.
And I'm Evie.
And none of us really know who's talking at any point because we are still in lockdown. We are still doing this over Discord. And every other podcast you hear out there is doing the same. So in times like this, it's important to spare a thought because we're the hardest done by. And if our jokes seem like they're getting a bad response, it's because we're all about 3 seconds out of sync. Pause for laughter.
Yes, please, in this trying time.
I'm doing my best to edit it so that the laughter lines up with the joke, but sometimes it's hard to tell which laugh goes to which joke, etc. So yeah, if the episode like doesn't seem funny, just like, that's on you.
Yeah, we may have to resort to putting in a Frasier style laugh track.
Look, what matters is that we know we're funny.
To kick it off in funny climate news, because we really don't get much of that. I think if anyone's been listening to any of our episodes forever, we've sort of got like jokes adjacent to climate news as opposed to jokes about the climate. But up top, there's been actually a fair chunk of news in climate change. One of them is positive, but I don't think it'll last forever, as these things do. But in a fairly funny sort of shot themselves in the foot moment, airlines around the world were sort of scrambling to figure out how they're going to remain relevant in a climate change world, a world that's actually taking care of the issue of climate change and reducing emissions. And they wanted to sign on to essentially a carbon trading sort of scheme, and they wanted to start planting more trees and doing their part. But what they wanted to do first off was establish a baseline for what their future emissions should be judged against. And they decided, after being pushed for these sort of amendments, the airline industry sort of got together and decided that what they should do is look at 2019 to 2020 as their baseline against which their emissions should be judged and their carbon offsets priced. And unfortunately, flights have been slashed by the thousands at the moment. And so without amendment, they're essentially going to be trying to judge their carbon offset targets against a year where most commercial flights were grounded and absolutely no carbon emission was going into the air a lot of the time, which is fucking fantastic.
It's
so funny.
It's so beautiful.
Nature's so beautiful.
Because they were expecting this to be a banner year. Yeah. And the politics of setting baselines for emissions is a really, really dodgy thing. You've got to keep an eye on that. Because you constantly hear of how emissions are going. Usually they're set against the baseline of 2005. That's been one that we've used. And that year wasn't just picked because it was a representative baseline or because that's when they drafted the legislation or anything. They picked 2005 because it was one of the highest emission years for that like period before and after it. And so even if business was as usual, it would look like we were still doing better than 2005. So it's so nice to see some friggin' big polluters trying to pull their dirty shenanigans and just absolutely being screwed over by it. Now, they'll definitely try and get bailouts and change that, and they'll probably get away with it. But for a moment, yeah.
Yeah, we'll definitely be hitting that later, but...
Well, they've already gotten bailouts to some extent, but they should... What governments should be threatening is, like, government ownership as well, as we've talked about previously. But... I think so far Qantas has gotten bailout, but Virgin is on the verge of getting one now too. But I think it was Albo who said that he threatened that we should have public ownership as part of the deal of a bailout.
What's that meme where it's like, airlines, oh, we want to set emissions by the 2020 mark. World has coronavirus. Airlines, no, not like that.
Yeah, look, we're hardcore non-eco-fascists on the podcast, but there is something delightful when it gets stuck to the capitalist or the big businesses.
Yeah, just like, well, actually, businesses aren't people, so it's okay to be anti-business because businesses are not people.
Yeah, when a large like international mega corporation gets sent to a labor camp, I'm for it.
Yeah. Would that just be a large corporation being turned into a labor camp? Is that how that works?
No, that's just Amazon.
No, they already are.
I'm just imagining like the Amazon logo, like sitting at a coal face. Not a coal face. The mine's been shut down. No, you.
I just want to see them anyway. Put like Ronald McDonald and Mr. Peanut up against the wall and machine gun.
Mr. Peanut's already dead, man.
They're not people. Yeah, they're not people. They're corporations. Good.
That's one down.
We're hardcore Trotskyites, but only when it comes to like memes and logos. Yeah. In less funny news, though, the rest of the climate stuff we want to talk about.
Yeah.
The New South Wales Berejiklian government has approved extensions of coal mining under Sydney's reservoirs, which is...
This is like under their water source.
Yeah.
They're mining in Minecraft style in under a major body of water. It's insane.
It's so funny to me how it's all the fracking that's being pushed through right now when they think no one else can see it. Mm.
Well, it's quite funny because fracking is only economically viable when oil prices are quite high. And in America, for example, right now, you've got oil prices absolutely crashing. I haven't been tracking global oil prices. I've only been looking at America. And now you've got all these companies and states being like, oh, no, but fracking is only working when the oil prices are above $10 a gallon or whatever. And now... all of our fracking companies are in danger of going bankrupt. And it's like, good. RuPaul loses half their bloody ranch. So, RuPaul fracks on their ranch.
Lang, do you think the reason why then that fracking projects and coal mining projects have been pushed through right now is not just so it's a diversion, but basically they're trying to prove that they're actually their existence right now? So they're like, oh, look, we're doing all these exciting projects.
No, I don't think they're being pushed through in response to anything. I think all of these things were probably like everyone's been trying to push fracking as hard as they could for a decade, and now they're just taking this chance to push through some things. They probably would have tried to push them through anyway.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the thing to remember, the galling thing about all of these things is that these aren't usually, I mean, we'll probably find out that some were, but these aren't usually proposals that get done up in this really quick time frame of 2 months when, like, Corona kicked off.
Yeah.
These were in the works for a really long time. The galling thing about them is they weren't put on hold in response to Corona. They're just sort of also passed through at the same time.
Exactly.
They just keep going business as usual.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I suppose that, like, really leads into the next point that we had there, which is the Andrews government's locked in 10 more years of native forest logging. That is like a classic situation where we had like, oh, okay, are we going to lock in 10 more years of native forest logging? And there's some groups that are like, hell yeah, we want to cut down the trees because that's our business. And then there's another group that's like, we shouldn't do that because it's really time consuming and difficult to restore native forests. And the sort of baselines that we have for establishing whether a native forest has been restored or not are really, really loose. And so there's this sort of back and forth.
Mm.
And then the bushfires happen and they destroy huge swaths of this native forest. And then the bushfires stop and they're like, okay, so where were we? Rather than being like, should we revisit this discussion in a new light?
And it's
like they still approved it, even though we already lost a bunch of our native forest. The value of this stuff is different, but it went ahead anyway.
It's extremely bad. In some areas, they've lost like 60% of native forest reserves, and these new forestry agreements that have been renewed, they've not actually increased the protected area in unburnt areas. They've said, you know what, it's probably good enough. Just keep logging what you were basically going to log anyway, despite the fact that we've just lost so much habitat. And at the same time, Daniel Andrews has approved, and this is worse than it was before, he's approved onshore gas drilling in Victoria. That was a ban. We had banned that, and it wasn't actually meant to get approved for another 3 months or, like, go up for debate for another 3 months. They've just pushed that through. You can now drill for gas in Victoria. You couldn't before.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that I want to hit on just, like, a little bit harder. So Daniel Andrews is probably one of the best sort of, like, state-level leaders in Australia at the moment in terms of, like, responding to the coronavirus scandal and that sort of thing. He's very good at, like, giving a, you know, compassionate narrative that pushes this sort of, like... He genuinely appears to be somebody who...
He seems quite competent.
...feels like he has some responsibility or custodianship towards the populace rather than, like, your Scott Morrisons who are just like, why aren't the dirty peasants obeying me? Like, Daniel Andrews is like, you know, we'll get through this together, that sort of thing. And so he gets a lot of positive cred.
He's still a businessman,
The man is a, you know, slash-and-burn environmental vandal. And I'm not a tree hugger. I want to see the human race survive. He's just a businessman. And so when you think like, oh, Daniel Andrews, why isn't he PM? He's like, he would absolutely be a better prime minister than Scott Morrison, but he would be a climate disaster because he's Labor through and through, and they are like, yeah, we're nice to people, but we will sell the entire planet, even if it means that, you know, the human race is floating in space dead.
Yeah, the Labour blue-collar roots, you know, in Australia, blue-collar means we're mining things, we're cutting things down, hard-working Aussies deforesting, digging their money out of the ashes of our native yep. environment.
Yeah, so I just wanted to make it clear that even though I will gladly credit him for all of his, like, socially progressive things that he said and like, you know, that sort of thing, I have nothing but contempt for the man.
Yeah, there seems to be a lot of, like... He's trying to, like, carry over moral credits by, like, you know, saying the right things in certain ways and doing some good things and, like, lip service to the LGBTI community and, like, saying some good things about Indigenous folk over the time. But, like, also, absolutely, he's an authoritarian that loves banning any sort of protest in any way he can. He is, like you said, an environmental vandal. But he's just sort of, like... Like, sort of like putting his finger to his cheek and being like, but remember all the nice things I said? Guys. Yeah,
he's absolutely one of the best leaders in Australia at the moment. And that is such a dire, cold condemnation of Australia's leadership.
He embodies just like the aesthetics of someone who cares, but like, that's it. It just shows how hollow it is.
I think he genuinely cares. I think ScoMo is like a hollow suit with no person in it.
Yeah.
I think Daniel Andrews is a real person.
Yeah.
I'll credit him that, but I don't think he's a good person.
I did.
Daniel Andrews, real person.
Real person.
I liked Andrews sort of, like, I watched him do a press conference. Like, I watched the whole thing recently when the stage 3 lockdown laws came in, which was like, you know, no gatherings of more than 2 people. You can't hang out with your mates, go home. And the way he was speaking struck me as what Scott Morrison thinks he's presenting as.
Yeah.
Like, he was standing there in a North Face jumper and he was speaking really awkward, like, look, I don't want to send you home. I don't want to send the cops out, but I have to. You've buggered it up, all right? Now I don't... It's just what's going to happen. And when you watch Scott Morrison...
Don't make me bloody come out there.
Yeah, and when you watch Scott Morrison, oh, you think you're doing that, whereas Dan Andrews actually seems like he was probably the head of a small union at some point and then the Labour Club, and he's always been doing that sort of, like, politicking. And watching him made Morrison make more sense, because it's like, you don't know how to do this. You have had such a different life.
He sung Solidarity Forever enough at the end of meetings just to, like, slightly internalize it.
Yeah. But the risk is always, like Tom said, he genuinely cares about people during the coronavirus in Victoria. But he also genuinely cares about getting gas operations up and going because they're good for the economy.
I think this is the problem, is someone like Daniel Andrews, he's a competent politician. He's a competent guy at getting things done. He's running a state, you know, pretty well for a lot of the people that live there. And then you've got people, obviously, like Scott Morrison, incompetent at even what he's trying to do. But the problem is, in this day and age, we are in a situation where we don't just need competent politicians who are okay at doing their job. We need to actually shake up the system and have people out there who are going to make things better. You need those, like... ambitious politicians who don't want to just keep things running smoothly, because you keep things running smoothly and that is a very smooth curve into the apocalypse.
Well, speaking of keeping things running smoothly, Australia has had the Emissions Reduction Fund for a small little while. It keeps going through amendments, and it's essentially the Liberal Party's version of paying lip service to reducing emissions in this country. But in news that should shock no one, a report's actually come out that's described how 1 in 5 of Australia's big polluters have actually breached the government set emission limits.
For the last decades, since we've done the whole Kyoto thing, since we've been talking about climate change, we've just brought in incompetent scheme after incompetent scheme. And the Emissions Reduction Fund we've been paying polluters to attempt to reduce their emissions. And then every time they've wanted to not do that, we've figured out a way to allow them to increase their emissions even more. And they've even kept breaching those limits. So it's not even about we haven't got some taxes back. It's that we've actually paid $2.5 billion to polluters to not even pollute less.
Yeah, it's a subsidy based on the idea of, like, hey, you're definitely going to try, aren't you? And they're like, yeah, no, we're totally going to give it a red hot go. I mean, we can't right now, but if you could just help us out.
Yeah, it's wild. And we've also changed it at some point so that we weren't just counting their emissions. We were counting their emissions by versus their production. So they're like, yeah, we're emitting more, but we're also making more money. so it's okay. And like, no, that's the whole reason global emissions have gone up is because global economy's gone up, because we're making more stuff, we're doing more stuff. The Earth doesn't give a shit. The Earth just sees the emissions. The Earth then goes, okay, hang on, but your GDP is pretty good, so I will count that in your favor. I will only send one tidal wave per capita, you know.
It's the same ideology that's, like, we saw it playing out in a compressed format with the coronavirus stuff, where there's the sort of, there's that narrative that keeps cropping up of, like, oh, but if we do this, then the virus wins sort of thing, you know, like, oh, if we all, like, sacrifice our economy, then that's just letting the virus win, where it's, like, really giving a lot of, like, personality and agency to just, like, a biological process.
We've made the virus sentient.
It's like, this isn't a rogue nation that you can sort of cow into submission or, like, you know, approach diplomatically. It's just some physics going on, and get out of the fucking way. Like, deal with it.
I think conservative media really got an easy run with terrorism because they were basically allowed to say whatever they wanted and put words in the terrorists' mouths. I don't think the terrorists actually did care whether people were eating fast food on a Friday or whatever else people said the terrorists would care about if they didn't do. I think they were just able to call it whatever, but now we're up against forces of nature. Unfortunately in the realm of fact. Which doesn't help.
And now we're putting words into the virus's mouth.
I think
the virus hates Jesus.
Climate stuff, you do see that happening, but they say, like, oh, the greenies won't want me to say blah, 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 but the economy's doing really well. As though it were
Greta Thunberg is not happy about this one.
Yeah, as though it were the greenies who were, like, imposing these restrictions rather than the greenies who were, like, people with a vested interest in not dying. Like, they're not a force trying to get their own way. They're a force that's trying to stay alive.
I accidentally stumbled upon a really shitty article. I thought I was reading the Washington Post. It wasn't. It was the Washington Times or some American thing. This is about, okay, and I'm not going to go into the America too much because that is a whole other podcast that I'm sure somebody else is doing. during the coronavirus, this is wild. This blows us out of the water. During this coronavirus crisis, the USA has stopped all EPA air and water laws. They stopped their environmental laws. There are no environmental pollution laws active in America.
Holy shit.
At the moment.
It's just...
They're not even... Yeah. Because the EPA is how they track that stuff. The EPA is basically saying our clean air and water laws, they're not happening right now. And this is a quote, the EPA does not expect to seek penalties for violations of routine compliance, monitoring, testing, sampling, laboratory analysis, training, or reporting or certification obligations in situations where we agree that COVID-19 was the cause of the non-compliance. So companies can say, yeah, but COVID-19, we had to dump all of that arsenic in the water supply. And the EPA will say, how much arsenic? And they'll go, oh, the guy who counts the arsenic didn't want to come in.
Also because of Corona. Fucking Christ, that country.
And I read an article about this. There are some very good articles about this, but I read one that was like, this is great. And oh, Greta Thunberg's going to be spitting. She is, oh, that she's scowling about this. I'm like, well, she's probably scowling a bit less than the people who live in America.
It's just,
she's not drinking that water.
America is Joe Exotic's all the way up. Like, at all times, in all areas. Like, it's just, they just put suit ons and get better haircuts. But it's just that same wild, like, my freedom sort of mentality. That's just fucking wild.
I think there's also that thing of, like, they've got the, you know, like, we're a great country as part of their national identity. And so when things like, you know, Flint, Michigan hasn't had clean drinking water for, you know, like, the better part of a decade now. That isn't something that a, you know, the best country in the world thing has going on. But they're like, well, you know, we're still the best. Oh, don't talk about that. Yeah.
They assume there must be a good reason for it. They assume clean water must be impossible to get. It must cost trillions. We can't just throw money at clean water anytime any town can't drink water.
It's like when we ask billionaires to, like, donate to these sort of causes, you always get, like, these little people in the replies going, like, oh, what have you done for Flint? What have you done for, like, the ventilators and stuff like that? Elon Musk is just trying to do his best.
And you know they're little.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's like, I'll tell you what I have done for Flint. I have at least given a shit about it, like, which is more than I can say.
I do a podcast.
Yeah. But that's the thing. Even being like, fuck, that's bad. Like, just saying that, that's more than the people, what have you done about it? Look, I said that. Do you agree with me on that? That at least get to that point. Like, there's so many fuck things. Like, did you know, this is one that I only found out, we're harping on about America too much, but did you know that since Katrina, New Orleans doesn't have a public school system?
I did hear that. Yeah. And they just got like bodies here and there to a slightly separate thing.
Oh, there's that building where there's a corpse visible from the street that they won't.
They've basically just fenced that state off and been like, ah, fuck it.
Yeah. Ah, fuck. There's no jokes to be made about that. That's so grim.
It's mad. Let's move on.
It's only that, like, that type of laughter that you have where it's just like, it's that grim, if I wasn't laughing at this, it'd just be sort of screaming. But it's like, it's like laughing at a Jackass thing where it like, it's like America got hit in the nuts with something and you're just like, oh,
That's why we're a comedy podcast, because otherwise we'd just be a screaming podcast.
It's the clip of somebody getting hit in the nuts, but you watch the clip after you read that they ended up in hospital and died.
Oh, like, no.
Where they were just like, oh, man, like, I can see.
But I think the outcome, the moral of this little story is there's going to be a bunch of shit. People are going to try and get stuff passed by saying it's because of Corona. Don't let them do it. Don't let them bring back single-use plastic bags. Don't let them make protesting illegal. Don't let them friggin' drill your gas mines because your economy needs to be better. There is no excuse, and coronavirus is not a good excuse.
Yeah, coronavirus won't stop climate change. It's given us a bit of like a dip in emissions while we suspend industry to maintain isolation and that sort of thing. But if we turn it back on, then, you know, we mean like the society is going to collapse from climate crisis in, you know, like December instead of July of whatever year that happens in.
It has shown us how much we don't need the airline industry and how much fuck them.
I don't know about that. I mean, I haven't wanted to go on holidays yet, but I reckon I'd rather get to Berlin via the airplanes than the cruise liner.
Oh, yeah. No, cruise liners should all go die. And what I love about the cruise ship industry is they're even easier to get fucked because they're not even registered in Australia or America. They're all registered in the Bahamas. And so when they come saying, oh, can you bail us out? Be like, oh, I'm sorry. Are you, do you pay taxes to us? Oh, are you registered in this country? Oh, does most of the money that you spend go to this country? Oh, so why don't you go to the Bahamas for help? Oh, okay. Have fun with that.
That whole narrative plays out, that whole little scene. And then it's like 10 minutes later, ScoMo's on the phone like, yeah, we'll bail you out.
We're announcing a business stimulus package for the Bahamas.
Let's talk about these JobKeeper payments that we got announced this last couple of weeks. We're learning a lot of interesting details about what exactly these payments entail and what the wealth transfer that actually is occurring.
Yeah, there was some like back and forth on Twitter with people wondering how bad it's going to be, and then everyone sort of being shocked that it wasn't as bad as it could be. So far as it goes, I don't think it's worth getting into the details. We'll have some stuff in the show notes about like the very basic sort of parts of this. It's especially worth looking at if you're wondering if you do qualify for what's called the JobKeeper stimulus payment. But it's essentially, it's an initiative to try to get businesses to keep people employed and to keep those people that are employed in their houses and eating food because they're being paid a rent from the government. Essentially, how this works is that you, as a business, and there is obviously most people in Australia and the world would know that there's been a lot of businesses, especially in hospitality, that have had to what they thought would be just shut down. They thought they would have to just close up, shut down, never come back. And this stimulus package that we've got in Australia is essentially trying to say, you can tell us that you're going to lose a bunch of money from coronavirus, and instead of laying off a bunch of workers, we will pay you, we'll give you the money to pay them. So what happens is your boss boss goes to the government and says, I'm going to lose money. Can I have the wages? And then they get the money and then they pass it on to the workers that they get to stay. Now, there's already a bunch of issues with that. For instance, one of the qualifications to qualify as a job keeper, as someone employed by a business, if you're a casual, you had to have been at the same place as a casual for 12 months. Anything under that, and they don't pay you a wage. So there's a bunch of people who have been in hospitality for much more than 12 months, but have had to go between venues or between businesses for however long. Yeah. They're not eligible to get.
Yeah, and also this is presumably who is saying how long they've been in that job. It's the employees, right? They're saying how many people do employ and how long they've been there for, and they go, oh, nobody.
They need to reply on the rely on employers, right. A, telling the truth, and B, even putting them on the program in the first place. Like, I know people who are eligible for the job keeper payment, but also don't really know whether their employers can be relied upon to actually make sure that they get it.
Right. Casual hospitality bosses, a lot of them are jerks.
I also just want to point out what a, like, how much this exposes the casual employment system as a bunch of shit, where the whole point of the casual employment system is that it sort of, the idea of the casual employment system is that it lets workers move around in industries that are sort of unstable with, like, oh, you know, like these kind of places close down. It's hard to maintain that kind of staffing level if we've got this way to employ somebody that's just this sort of hour by hour casual thing rather than hiring somebody on as a permanent, you know, part-time flexible hours, you know, member of staff. We can just use the casual system. But now the government's openly admitting that there are enough people who are on a casual, like, contract that have still been at the same place for over a year. And that's, like, that's the way that we talk about, like, casual employees. It's like, if this is the way that we're dealing with casual employees, like, yes, you qualify, yeah, but you have to have been at the same place for more than a year. Like, if you're a casual employee that's been at the place for more than a year, why the fuck aren't you a permanent employee? Like, what is the casual sort of relationship doing there?
They did make rules around that. They made rules that, you, again, you can ask your employer to make you permanent, but again, it's not enforceable.
No. And if you're casual, you don't get sick days, you don't get holiday pay, you're probably paid cash half the time, but then you're probably not even on the books.
That's the other thing. This is another thing to keep in mind, is that a lot of the people that won't be qualifying for JobKeeper, especially young people, probably people at university, are also not going to be able to apply for it, even if they have been at a place for more than 12 months, because they were getting cash in hand jobs, because they were struggling as enough already that they couldn't afford to have the tax on it. The businesses were unscrupulous enough to pay them cash in hand stuff. And so there's people that are now just shit out of luck entirely in this system. There's also the problem with the gig economy as well, which is sort of, it's essentially tied into this as well, where so many people have four or five minor casual jobs that they haven't been able to do for that long at all, and they keep bouncing around, and they are essentially just delivery drivers who are now not going to be able to benefit from this, which is, like, this is, you know, harkening back to what McLean said a couple episodes ago. I mean, essentially for the last month we've been talking about how there's bad unemployed and good unemployed, and the government really want you to know that there's still better and worse ways to be unemployed. If you are unemployed now after having a full-time job at, like, a laboring firm or something, or, like, you know, at a construction site, and you get laid off, well, gosh darn it, you're a true blue rinky-dink Aussie and you deserve a handout. Oh, you were waiting tables for a bit? Well, yeah. Fuck you.
Not to mention that a lot of delivery drivers and things aren't even casual employees. They're contractors in some fucked up way. And so they probably don't even count as being employed by anybody.
Yeah, I think there are actually clauses in the thing to cover people who are contractors that still contract for the same place.
There are.
Yeah.
So if you're an independent contractor, again, we'll have the links up in the show note for you to check out. If you think you won't get any of these stimulus packages, you should double check, because you might. They are changing every day. For instance, one thing to keep in mind is that they've actually recently raised the minimum for how much your partner earns before you're cut off. Essentially, if you live with someone, if you have a partner and they earn a whole lot of money, you can't claim Centrelink. You can't claim welfare. They've recently raised how much it is.
And it used to be comically low.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it used to be like 15 bucks a week.
Like 50,000.
Yeah, it was fucked. So just definitely keep an eye on that sort of stuff, and don't listen to us. We're not financial experts, and we'll get into why we have to make that claim pretty soon. But one thing I want to flag now, and this is just pure speculation, this is hopefully defamatory in someone specific in our federal government, but what we are doing with this, and we'll get into some more specifics in a bit, but this is, to my mind, a type of wealth transfer from poor taxpayers to rich business owners. I am very worried that what will happen with this type of payment is that a lot of workers are going to get fucked and a lot of business owners are going to fill their line their own pockets with these payments. Part of the reason why I think that is because we are essentially giving the money to bosses and saying, you do the right thing, pay it on to your workers and report to the ATO and to the government properly all the different, like, you know, all the different things that you've done. The reason why I'm not confident about that is because we've covered it on this fucking podcast that not that long ago, the entire hospo industry pretty much collapsed because it was revealed that none of them paid their workers the legally defined minimum.
Mm. Yep.
There was also an amnesty on superannuation, an amnesty clause on superannuation that if you reported to the government now that you were underpaying superannuation, you wouldn't get in legal trouble with it and you could start to pay people back. And the week of 7,000 plus businesses stepped forward and went, yeah, nah, we weren't doing the right thing, yeah. So please don't get us in trouble. So excuse me for a tiny bit of fucking cynicism when I think that businesses can't be trusted to pass this on in full to every worker.
Yeah, and the government can't be trusted to make the businesses do it.
Just the government can't be trusted with it, full stop.
Yeah, they're legally obliged to do it.
I've got to say, though, like before this all started, before the JobKeeper payments were announced, I don't want to, like, I'm not saying this in a doomer way, but I have to say I was a little bit more optimistic that much more sweeping changes and decisions would be made. But I have to give it to the Morrison government that they've managed to find the most red tape covered way to possibly do this wealth transfer.
It's pretty amazing that, like, when it's like the environment, they're like, oh, we can't have this red tape. No red tape. But as soon as, like, workers' rights things, it's like, well, okay, so the red tape works like this. First of all, if you're an employer, if you've been there for more than 12 months with a casual blah, blah, blah,
yeah, you can't have people getting away with maybe getting slightly more money than we think they should be getting. But when it comes to the environment, it's like, well, we can't let some bloody endangered gobbledygook stand in the way of an honest logger. What if he has to do paperwork?
I want to make a prediction on this podcast too.
Yep.
You know how in the last couple of years we've been struggling with robo-debt? I guarantee that will come back in force after this is all over. They're going to be clawing back money that people got for these claims now. And they're going to say, oh, well, you got maybe like $5 more. Why don't you pay it back with 300% interest?
Yep, that's 100% accurate. I'm on board with this prediction. It's the saddest thing I've ever heard, but yep. I also want to say that we're talking about being eligible for these certain payments and that sort of thing, and that is under the specific Job Seeker and JobKeeper programs. But speaking more generally, if you are not making much money and are struggling to make rent and food and that sort of thing, as part of the basic social contract, are eligible to be taken care of by your government. And if it turns out that you can't actually adequately, like, receive that kind of care that every government owes their people, then the means of redress is if you get, like, a rag and a bottle of some strong... I'll put it in the show notes.
So some reporting coming out from... some really interesting sort of investigative reporting coming out from Sky News, excuse me, today was that there are...
Sorry, hang on, Mitch. It sounded like you just said there was some interesting reporting coming out of Sky News. I think my Discord's fucked up.
Yeah, no, so Sky News actually did some reporting today. We're recording this on Sunday the 5th. That the Labor opposition, federal opposition, are actually really worried that the Morrison government is going to, I think in Anthony Albanese's words, entirely fuck workers like Jesus Christ. They're going to fuck them. I think that's what he's... I think that's a direct quote. So what they're worried about is sweeping changes to workplace relations and EBAs with... What they're looking at the moment, the Morrison government, sorry, is looking at bosses' ability to force workers to just go part-time and to have their per-hour salary cut. And the idea being at the moment that there is a sunset clause on these changes that's going to be 3 months at a minimum, and then they can be reviewed for potentially three more months in the future. But the Labor government have said that they're actually genuinely worried that the way this is being proposed and the way it's going to be put through is just going to mean that this applies to literally everyone, not even if you're a corona-affected business, just fucking everyone, and that the sunset clause will not be stuck to, because why would it be? What is actually really, like, really disappointing on this is the employers and employer business unions and the coalition of bosses has signed off on this, but so have some of the major unions, including Sally McManus has said that she's actually pretty good with this because otherwise businesses collapse and we don't have any workers. Don't know what the Australian Unemployed Workers Union think, but probably not along those lines. It's really scary and disappointing that some conceivably strong workers unions are not following along with that. But again, this was only reporting by Sky News, so it might be entirely made up.
No, it is actually true. I would say that the union leadership on this is very disappointing. If you recall, at the very start of this crisis, Sally McManus was only calling for 2 weeks sick leave. And their proportionate response to what needs to be done has been very, very mediocre.
But this is the kind of thing where there's going to be a lot of stuff being pushed through, and the fact that Parliament isn't sitting means that we don't have the normal to and fro and debates and petitions getting read out and whatnot. Things can get moved through a lot faster. And obviously with something like coronavirus, things have to get moved through very fast. And in a lot of circumstances, that's important. But it also means that some things might get moved through without the normal scrutiny that they should honestly have.
There's been this really recurring thing of, like, when criticizing Scott Morrison's, like, decisions and that sort of thing, of people being like, oh, you know, now's not the time. You've got to put politics aside. Don't you know there's a crisis? Which is this ridiculous sort of situation, because he's a very bad leader, untrustworthy in the sort of sense of, like, you know, I don't trust him to act in people's best interest, and I also don't trust him to be able to execute any kind of plan competently. So it's a crisis, so absolutely now is the time to talk about who our leader is and whether they're doing a good job, because it's very important that our leader is a good person who's capable of pulling it off, and he's neither.
And also, when people say we should put politics aside, what do they think politics is? And what do they think the job of a politician is? And especially when it's a politician saying to put politics aside, it's like, okay, so should we just get rid of all of you guys and just have a panel of experts? Because I'd be up for that. Sounds like your entire job is friggin' politics because you're not qualified in anything else. And when it's no time for politics, let's get some scientists in there.
It's always worth remembering that our politicians are in the position that they're in because they're extremely good at politics in a literal sense.
Yep.
They're really good at getting through, like, the young liberal club and making connections and setting up factions and getting enough votes on their side. They're not good at anything else. That's the big thing to keep in mind, is that they look at expert advice and go, I'm going to use my expertise in figuring out how this will help me, and then I'm going to apply it in a way that will continue to help me.
And when they say they're not doing politics, that's a political tactic. That's when you're in a debate and you say, I'm just going to say this, not as part of the debate. No, it's still part of the debate. It's a debating tactic.
It's like when American governments, like, they always say, like, whenever there's, like, a school shooting or something, and they're like, well, now's not the time to play politics when there's a tragedy that's just happened.
Oh, yeah, don't politicize this. Yeah, we've got the whole sort of situation so, like, upside down, where at the moment what we have is, like, we've got our politicians who are good at, like, pulling strings, making connections, doing deals, and then they have advisors who are the people who have expertise in what's going on. And they're like, obviously we politicians need to be in power because somebody needs to pull the strings and make the deals, and we can get advised by the people who know what's going on. But hey, here's an alternative. What about the people who know what's going on, the experts, get put in charge, and they have advisors who are good at pulling strings and making deals, who they say, hey, you, like, pull whatever strings you need to do to fucking get the environment saved. You know, off you pop, do whatever deals. Rather than the person who's the deal maker deciding what happens. Like,
the problem there is the people who are the experts are all friggin' nerds, and the people who pull the strings are all really charismatic and will bloody strong arm those nerds into doing what they want anyway. It's a tough one.
That's the thing, though. Like, I mean, Lang, no offense, but you're a huge nerd and you're not charismatic at all. No, you're a very charismatic nerd. But the thing is, if someone's a nerd who knows what they're talking about, no amount of charisma can get them to, like, go against their own expertise.
Sure, sure. Charisma, maybe, but politicking. Like, you look at situations where you've got these bloody experts on health and policy and the economy, and then you've got a bunch of dickheads standing right there directly contradicting them. Why does, you know, the head of the medical or science associations not say, no, actually, Mr. Prime Minister, you're entirely wrong? It's because the Prime Minister has more friends in high places because that's how he works. Like, people are power.
I like the idea that Lang's theory of politics is that it just arose naturally out of nerds being bullied by cool people.
That's 100% what it is. That's why politics exists. Because if it was the rule by who was right, you wouldn't need politicians. You just go, well, this guy has the right idea. His thesis checks out. We'll be doing that.
Philosopher kings. To burn through a little bit more of the wealth transfer that's taking place, like we said, the Morrison government has gotten some things ostensibly right, and we'll see how they manage to fuck it up later, because they're really good at that. If something appears too good to be true, they're going to later find a way to completely ruin it. They have said that there's free childcare.
Oh, we should maintain a level of suspicion at all times.
Yeah, 100%. So there's going to be free childcare, and it's supposed to be prioritised for children of healthcare workers. That's really good. Some reporting's come out in the last few days that the childcare industry, again, the experts, are really worried that it's not going to be sustainable for them, and they're going to have to just shut down anyway, which is, you know, going to result in less childcare, which is not great. We're also, again, we're not financial advisors, so we're not going to be saying anything which way about quantitative easing. But the banks have essentially gotten a large $90 billion, not a bailout because they weren't struggling, but essentially like a nice little gift package to start lending and to keep the economy afloat. There's been really good reporting from Michael West and Evie's favorite YouTuber, Friendly Geordies. They've got some really good videos on the, on this whole issue about how it's essentially being obfuscated at the moment. During essentially the coronavirus, there's just money being made out of thin air, which they can't ever do, they will say, until a moment like this, in which case it's the only thing that they can do.
One thing that we didn't talk about earlier is that foreign nationals aren't eligible for either of these payments. And not only is like that stupid in and of itself, that could seriously affect our supply chain as well, considering that a lot of our supply chain relies on temporary visa holders. They're the ones that are doing the fruit picking. They're the ones that are doing a lot of the stacking shelves. So it's ironic in a way that it's not the stockpiling or anything like that that's going to affect people's access to food, but it's the government managing to screw up a very significant portion of who's actually getting this payment.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, why are the shelves empty? Because we're racist.
Virgin Australian Airlines have asked for a $1.4 billion bailout.
Nationalise it.
They want $1.4 billion. And as Evie mentioned before, we finally had the Labor government go, oh, maybe if we give them we don't give them $1.4 billion, we nationalise them and they're ours now.
Yeah.
And not to be outdone, Qantas then went, oh, we want $4.2 billion and we want to stay private, which is by itself incredible in terms of it being like, again, a wealth transfer because of what we covered in previous episodes about Qantas laying people off and then receiving bonus payments anyway, like in order to save money, they had to cut staff. And then also they got a stimulus package which outstripped the wages that they said they couldn't afford. The only reason I wanted to put this one in there and really focus on it again is because we have Virgin Australia and Qantas very publicly making a political maneuver to say, we want billions and billions of dollars in handouts from the government. And in news, again, coming from Michael West very recently, he's one of the best independent journalists in this country, and if you can afford to donate to his media company, you definitely should. He's had a report coming out that recurring not good enough secondary character, Energy Minister Angus Taylor.
Oh, I hate him.
Failed to declare that both he and his wife were gifted membership into the highest tier of the Virgin and Qantas reward program for hoity-toity dickheads. apparently in the Michael West story, which we've got in the show notes, the Angus Taylor's department and his office refused to talk to Michael West for the story. But 2 days after they were asked about it the first time, he then had to come out and say that he forgot to mention these things and he had to put it on his register of interest. And he declared it as soon as the reporting was started, which is fucking incredible.
Yeah. Bloody failure to disclose these things. They just, the amount of times you hear about ministers going, oh, we forgot to say we were a member of, or we got this huge present of, it's, I don't even know what to say at this point.
Yeah, his defense as well was like, oh, well, you know, like there's a ton of other ministers that haven't declared it either I know about. That's like...
Name
some fucking names.
You, so good.
What are you for? Like, if you're aware that's of so what I'm good. Doing in Parliament, point it out.
Can I... I just want to bitch about, like, all these frequent flyer programs. Like, they are the most visible example of what it's like to be a rich person in any country. And it's worldwide. And it is very, very hard to game, even just as like a normal person with normal credit cards and normal spending habits. Like there's a lot of things that you can't put on credit cards that can accumulate these points. Like you can't pay rent with these with a lot of these credit cards and therefore accumulate those points. You can't pay for government services. So anything where you could conceivably rack up points that might add to you getting a free flight, you can't do that in a regular system. So it is the most visible and obvious marker of wealth that someone is rich enough to get free flights.
It's also the fact that like these frequent flyer programs are encouraging people to fly more when we should be encouraging people to fly less.
Mm. But yeah, there should be frequent flyer disincentives.
So here's the thing that blew my mind a little while ago, and this is something that I like tried to get up and going, and I made one post on Facebook about it and then just fucking left it. But in one of the Virgin programs, if you are in one of their like systems, you have this, you essentially don't pay for extra luggage that gets subsidized because you fly with us so much, you pay so much to our company, we subsidize your extra luggage costs.
That's right.
Why the fuck isn't it the case that if you're in that club, you get a letter every year saying, hey, thanks for flying so much. Because of the amount of money you've given us, we've managed to subsidize the extra luggage cost for pension card holders.
Mm. Also,
like when you're rich, it's really easy to stay rich. It's fucked.
It's important to note also that when you subsidize anything for a frequent flyer member, like giving them extra luggage allowance, that money's not coming from nowhere. It's coming from the airline's income, which is everybody buying tickets for that airline, which means that your luggage is being subsidized by everybody else's ticket prices. So once again, it's socialism for the richest.
So Energy Minister Angus Taylor, resign, bitch.
Resign to prison.
He's never going to.
He's not. But if he listens, he should.
Yeah, if you're listening, Angus, and get on the pod.
Yeah, come on, Angus Taylor, come on, not good enough.
Speaking about airlines fucking up everything massively at all times, the coronavirus thing is interesting because it spreads via airlines. And a lot of the reason everyone isn't flying right now is because we have to friggin' shut down airlines all over the world because, you know, that's how it got from country to country. And a lot of countries quite quickly did the right thing and they bloody locked down those airlines. And if you came into anywhere in China or Singapore, you would be temperature checked every 20 meters and had to go and isolate yourself for 2 weeks in a sort of gated community. And in Australia, apparently there's still, you can just go into Sydney Airport. They're now finally doing some kind of testing, but it is ramshackle. Yeah.
It's ridiculous that we're like, if you have fruit, if you have even a little piece of a nectarine anywhere in your luggage, we will find you and we will prosecute you. And like they've got the, you know, freaking whole quarantine. And it's like, and if you are carrying the worst infectious disease that the world has seen in 100 years, like maybe thinking about stopping past the quarantine office if you feel like it. Cab rank's over there.
Yeah. We'll give you a card. We'll give you a card that says maybe, or you can pick up a card and it says to not go outside for a couple of weeks and wear a mask. We won't give you a mask and there's no masks anywhere to be found in Australia, but just try to just put in some effort. you know, just try and do the right thing. Also, all of the guards at the airports now have assault rifles in case you're a terrorist. But if you're a terrorist with coronavirus, maybe we'll let you off.
It's this weird sort of like infinite feedback loop where it's like, you know, oh, we're strong on terrorists, but we are letting coronavirus carriers in. But the coronavirus is a bioweapon made by China. That's like, you know.
That's how you can tell they don't actually believe that. If they thought that the coronavirus was, you know, a terrorist plot, they'd be bloody all about it. They'd be like, fuck yes, a terrorist plot. We can be strong, man. Let's lock up everybody. Let's be honest, they wouldn't. Okay, China has us outgunned.
It is a weird loop as well that now the lefties are screaming about boats being let in and how we don't want it to happen.
Stop the boats, for God's sake.
We've been talking about the Ruby Princess debacle, I think, last week. McLean, and just in case anyone thought it was, McLean made some potentially defamatory remarks or whatever. No, I wholeheartedly endorse them as well, as does the entity Not Good Enough, just in case anyone was wondering.
Yeah, we're a comedy podcast, though, so...
There is also that.
I don't think I said anything defamatory.
No, I'm just saying, if you did, when we were talking about the Border Force and the New South Wales Health, I think you said something about you hope they all die. I'm not sure if you edited it out or not. But the Ruby Princess was a cruise ship that is now the passengers on board are accounting for fully 1/10 of all the coronavirus cases in this fucking country. As of this morning, again, Sky News is reporting that it is now under a criminal police investigation as to how and why the passengers were let off. What? There was talk about it potentially being an investigation by the police, but that doesn't necessarily mean criminal charges may be put on people, and now they are investigating it as if that might be the case.
Now, I gotta wonder what they're investigating here. Is the criminal investigation, like, in big letters on the board, who is the head of the Border Force Department? Because...
No, the criminal investigation is them trying to find the lowest person down in this whole thing that they can actually persecute, so no one in the government has to take the blame.
Is there a staffer?
Who's the scapiest goat on the boat?
Yeah, an unnamed staffer.
Now, actually, I love this cruise ship thing because it's like, now, presumably there are hundreds of cruise ship companies in the world, and presumably there are thousands of cruise ships in the world, maybe even millions. I wouldn't know. It's a garbage industry. But there's the friggin' Diamond Princess was the plague ship that everyone knows about. The Ruby Princess sailed into Sydney and infected Australia. And now you've got the Coral Princess has just pulled into Miami with 2 dead and 12 testing positive. Is this just the worst cruise ship company in the world?
Yeah.
What are all the other cruise ship companies doing?
It's because, Lang, all of them have are being held in the Bahamas. All their taxes are done there. So these are the most corrupt of the corrupt cruise ship lines.
I'm starting to get blackpilled into the idea that it is a bioweapon, but not developed by any like nation state, but by the Princess Cruise Company. We're sick of everybody saying that we're a shit industry, so we're going to take the world down.
Like, can any of you name another cruise ship at this point? I can name 3, and they all end in Princess.
Yeah, no, I've never heard of, like, cruise ship names before, I guess. Yeah, it's a bad sign in your industry that just, if I now know your individual vessels by name.
Is this like, you know, cyclones are given women's names and hurricanes are given men's names and I guess like plague ships are all princesses? Is that the canon that we're...
No, it's just this one company.
We've harped on a whole bunch on this show about... landlords and real estate agents are a type of parasite on society, about how rent is a bullshit concept regardless. But let's scale it back and let's just say in the current time, in the current moment that we have, all right, some people rent and we should try to keep relationships between people, whether they're a real estate agent or a renter or whatever. Let's see. Let's just keep it as positive as we can. What's come out in the last week, and it's crazy to think that this has only happened really in the last week in a massive way, but real estate agents have been told by the federal government that it's up to them and their renters to just work it out, to try to figure out how best to weather this storm together, because there's not going to be a freeze on rental payments, there's not going to be a freeze on mortgages coming from the government, so hey, just try to work it out. And so what do real estate agents do in response to that? They send out massive forms where they want to know how much you spend on food and entertainment per week. They want to know what your different jobs might be doing and how your finances and your savings and your investments are looking. And they're also telling people that, hey, have you considered dipping into your superannuation fund, which is a government initiative based on the stimulus package? You can dip into your superannuation to pay rent. And this rightly fucking blew up on Twitter. There was some really good work done by people like Joshua Badge that were sort of like getting the signal out there. Some journalists started to hit up some Labour politicians, and full credit to Labour MP for Whitlam, Stephen Jones, who wrote to ASIC to point out that there is potentially unlicensed financial advice being spread by real estate agents, and ASIC responded. And they put out a blanket letter that said, hey, to any real estate agents or landlords, just know that what you're doing might be construed as financial advice, and you run the risk of being fined up to $1 million for doing
or
so.
Or even going to prison.
Which is just delightful.
5 years. ASIC, by the way, is the Australian Securities and Investments Commission. I think they're basically the money police of Australia. And usually, given the way that money works in Australia, you can be like, do we have money police? Yeah, turns out we totally do, and they're actually working today. So, hey, shout out to ASIC for starting work when everyone else stops.
And also, I love, I think this is the kind of police we can all get behind, which are police mostly that just go after rich people. So go you
but
guys.
Yeah, so if your recipients aren't really getting investigated by ASIC these days, so yet. Sorry? No, not, touch wood. Please don't investigate Newstart recipients, ASIC. Just leave them the fuck alone.
So if your landlord sends you one of those types of letters or just tells you that you know, you've got options in paying rent if you can't afford it from your job, maybe withdraw from your super, jump onto our Facebook page. We've got the pictures from ASIC there, and you can just send them an email with those attached saying, oh, I think what you might be doing is illegal, and get them to fuck off.
Also, we put that letter together on our website too, to write to your local MP demanding rent freezes and mortgage freezes for the next couple of months.
Yeah, so if you want an email template to send out, that'll be up on the website, and you can just go through. We've also got the links to finding out who your local members in like local council, state council, and federal government are. Just shoot them a blanket email. I got some responses back already, which were varying degrees of barely adequate and totally shithouse. Thanks, Jed Kearney's office, for arguing with me.
It's important to remember also that real estate agents might seem scary, and they will talk a big talk, but they actually often don't know that much about the law or don't have as much kind of authority as they seem to. They're mostly just, they have big, scary friends, like your house.
That's the thing. They've never needed to know.
Exactly. If you put up a fight to them, they will often back down or, you know, obviously, that does depend on your agent and depends on your situation. Don't go, you know, risking your house. But if you have the opportunity to push back against a real estate agent in any way, take that opportunity because you'd be surprised.
So while we're all talking about how difficult it is to record a podcast remotely now that we are all locked in our own respective apartments and sort of thing, it's worth pointing out that all the refugees that we've been holding in immigration detention for the last many, many years are still being held in immigration detention, despite the fact that there's this horrible plague going around. So Nick McKim, the Green Senator, says he's getting reports that Home Affairs staff at the immigration detention centres are failing to provide not just adequate protections against coronavirus, but basic hygiene. So this is like this really fucked situation where the refugees, already in a really dire situation, are now like completely unprotected from corona as well. Like, this is the government just following on this legacy of years of like failing to meet basic human rights and just ramping it up.
Yeah, it's the same situation that you're getting in places like prisons, where I don't know about Australian prisons. I hear a lot about prisons in the US. It's in a situation where people are already being horrifically treated. Coronavirus is not going to make the people running these joints suddenly go, oh, what? We should give you human rights and healthcare. So Yeah, it's a time to really be aware that this is just making things so much worse for the people who it's already friggin' garbage for.
Yeah, you're at a much, much higher risk of contracting coronavirus if you're in a prison. And ironically, if you breach the lockdown laws, that can include prison time as a penalty. So
there's that dark laugh again. Just
yeah, that dark fucking laugh. Just a couple more notes on this. These are things that are not like major, high profile, big, sweeping, affecting everybody news items, but ones that I think are important to not get swept under the rug.
These are the ones that are super important to know about, but people at 7 and 9 can't put a 3D moving like splash image that looks really exciting behind the presenters when they talk about it. So that you're not going to hear as much about.
So there's just these last two items that I want to close out on. So one of them was an Indigenous man was arrested in Horsham for breaching a court order. And then while in custody, this was reported that his condition deteriorated. Which means he died. There's another death in custody reported as just, oh yeah, his condition deteriorated. You know how sometimes when you have a condition and it deteriorates and that's how you died? That's what happened to him.
Yeah. His condition was being alive and that deteriorated in the hands of the police.
The sickest possible, like whoever's making this euphemistic statement about the death of a person that they had a responsibility for, like I got to say, and I'm allowed to say this, I hope their condition deteriorates. Right? Because that's a fine thing to say. Because it's not a fucking death wish on anybody, but I really hope that their condition deteriorates.
Yeah.
Another one. So a refugee in detention was granted a visa by tribunal on March 11th, but the government ignored it. So this refugee was being held in detention. A tribunal said, let him out. He's okay. And the government was like, no.
How does that even work?
Well, they just didn't do it. They just ignored the decision. Right. They were just like, nah, he's staying in. And so there was another decision that was handed down by another judge. So that basically just like chewed them out for doing so. I'm just going to read out this quote, which is from the decision. The conduct of the minister in this case on just about any view has been disgraceful. Putting aside the fact the PDWL, which is the refugee, remains in detention despite having been granted a visa on 11th of March, that is 6 days prior to the hearing of these applications, the minister appears to have willingly and flagrantly failed to comply with the orders made by Perry J on 12th of March, 2020. So this is a court saying, let him out, and the government just being like, nah, with no reason given.
And that's it. They've just left it at that. The government just said, nah, and that's it.
Nah, that's it.
Because it's like, what do you appeal there? Because there's nothing to appeal. It's like, oh, but I don't feel like I should be here. And they go, no, you already appealed that. You shouldn't be here. We all agreed on that.
It's not that there's nothing to appeal. He did appeal. He won.
Yeah. So that's the thing. There's no further recourse. It's like, oh, we just want you to die in jail.
Yeah.
You can't appeal that. That's fucked. Wow.
Yep. That's the Australian government, by the way. We also do have other people in secret prisons and secret trials and that sort of thing, because when I talk about people in government being evil, I don't mean I disagree with them. I mean they're evil, like a necromancer. They're evil. That's it.
In that quote, though, as well, it's unclear whether the minister the judge was referring to is Alan Tudge or Peter Dutton. So they both get the blame equally.
Yeah. I'm just happy to say, like, either and both of them, like, their condition can deteriorate as well. And
I hope all of their conditions deteriorate.
Yeah, and may all of their conditions deteriorate. This has been not good enough. these kinds of stories are the ones where I'm like, not good enough as the name of the podcast describes some kind of, like, oh, look, at a societal scale, we're not responding adequately to these big problems that we're facing. But sometimes on a personal scale, you see one person in power causing direct horrible harm, sometimes death, to a person that is in their power with no remorse or apology. Mm. And it's sick.
Yeah. And if you're a government bureaucrat who is in a situation to do anything about that, maybe just sign that form and let him out and get in trouble. And then when they go, oh, you shouldn't have done that, you're getting in trouble, be like, now the tribunal said it was fine. And they can appeal that to the tribunal.
Yeah. Or maybe if you're in a position to do something about it, do it. And then if you're going to get in trouble for that, fucking get in trouble. Because maybe it's more important to not hold people in custody where they're going to contract the coronavirus, even though they've been granted a visa, or die and get, like, if you're in a position to do something about it and you haven't done something about it, I hope your condition deteriorates as well.
No, I mean people who aren't even in a position to do anything about it. I mean people who just, like, are in charge of minding that office for the day, and aren't allowed to just make those decisions. Fuck it, make those decisions anyway. If someone else isn't making a decision that should be made, it's your, you know, it's morally right to make that decision.
Yeah, if you find the keys to the cell, let them out.
Yeah.
There's heaps of people with access to, like, Peter Dutton's email. Just send an email. By the time they manage to do, like, crisis control on it, just send an email and change the passwords. Or send a tweet and change the password. Just be like, no, and then keep the password to yourself. So when he goes out and does a press statement saying, I was hacked, someone changed my Twitter and they're sending out statements, then later just be like, I had to lie on national TV to keep my job. I'm so sorry. And just keep it going.
It's coronavirus time. You think the normal rules are on? Come on.
No. No, they're not playing by the rules. If you have dirt on any major member of a political party, we do accept whistleblows and dirt sent to... what's our email address, Mitch?
goodpod@protonmail.com.
That's a secure email address.
It's encrypted.
It's encrypted, nice. So if anyone wants
don't
to send
us an
email...
Don't send it from your bloody Gmail, though. Get your own Proton Mail. It's free.
Actions for this week. Get yourself Proton Mail and send us dirt on politicians. the shout out / action this week would be check out Michael West Media, michaelwest.com.au. He's doing some of the best reporting on the JobKeeper stimulus package and everything that's going along with it. He's one of the best independent journalists this country still has.
I've also got to point out that Michael West is not just Michael West. It's an organization featuring multiple journalists, all of whom are doing good work.
It's Michael West Media is the name of his company. Yep. It's kind of like Van Halen, I think. Like, it's taken on a sort of, like, name of itself. And there's other people there, but also his face is pretty big on the website. But he accepts donations. So I dare say in this time, if you can, definitely consider giving some to him and his organization and the work that they're doing.
I also want to just give another shout out to the Australian Unemployed Workers Union. There's no rule against us doing the same shout out multiple times in a row. They're just continually doing great work, looking out for people who are struggling and looking out for, like, labor rights laws that really matter, which is the ones that apply to all laborers, not just the ones who have a job right now. So that's AUWU, Unemployed Workers Union. You can join it even if you have a job. It's totally fine. They'll let you in.
And if you've been paid in the last week, you should give some of your money to them. It's a moral imperative.
Thanks for listening. If you want to get in touch with any feedback, comments, dirt, we can be reached on the socials at NotGoodPod. And I want to add another little extra bit that says, if you've got dirt on another politician, maybe send it like Michael West or something, because we're probably not adequately...
No, I want the clout.
We will just forward it to actual journalists, probably.
I don't even want that responsibility. Forward it to an actual investigative journalist.
I can do it.
Not to us. Like, we would be delighted. We would be so delighted to receive dirt, but we would just be riffing it on our stupid podcast. We wouldn't be...
We'd be flattered, but I am unprepared for a raid by the AFP.
I'm a web developer, for God's sake. Why do I have this?
it'd be the best story, though. It'd be the best story.
Just setting all up right. An auto-reply on the Proton Mail account to just be like, what? Too spicy, too spicy.
Make sure you put the words dirt on politicians in the subject line so it goes to the right folder.
Yeah, okay. So here's I know that I'm spending too much time on the shout-outs, but fuck it, it's coronavirus. The normal rules don't apply. So the way that it works is if you've got, like, real dirt on a politician, send it to a real investigative journalist. If you've got funny dirt on a politician, like, yo, Peter Dutton was in a really bad mood today all day, like, just stamping around and slamming doors because his mum drove him to work and she wouldn't go past McDonald's for a McMuffin. Like, that, send that to us. That's the kind of scoop that we want.
We want petty memes.
Petty memes. If you've got a petty meme on a high-profile politician, send it to us. But if you got a real scoop...
Okay, end the podcast.
Not Good Pod is recorded on the lands of the Kulin Nation, where sovereignty was never ceded, and we want to acknowledge their elders past, present, and emerging.